Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And as always, can you tell how delighted I am to be with you here on the program? This is Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Barry, and we are talking about your money. I think next to breathing, the next most important thing to all of us is our money. How do we spend our money? How do we save our money? How do we make sure that we live the life we want because we've been smart about it? But, you know, as we always start the program, and I will do the same thing, are you financially fit? That's the question that I ask you every week. And what do I mean by that? Are you making more than you spend? Or are you spending more than you make? And you know what you're doing. If you're having to borrow week to week, if you've got to hit a payday loan place, or you've got to borrow from the relatives, then you are, in fact, spending more than you make. And that's not a pleasant place to be. And do you have that 6 months of survival funds in your saving account? Add up all of your monthly expenses, mortgage, rent, utilities, food and drink, clothing, fuel, transport, anything that you spend the money on every month. And the monthly total, you put that amount away. And I want you to do that for 6 months, every month. And you can do it slowly. And don't touch that money, folks. This is very special. You're putting away 6 months of survival funds, okay? That's going to be there. And nobody's going to touch it. You're not going to spend it. You know it's there. And we're talking about peace of mind when you do that. And then I want you to put away 3 months of emergency funds. You say, well, what's the difference? Well, we've all said the same thing. Did you hear what happened to so-and-so? Something is always going to happen. And in the space of a second or two, you can go from someone who can help to someone who needs help. So help yourself. Put away an emergency fund. You may have to share it with your kids or your family, but have it there. This is not your survival fund. This is an emergency fund, and it's very important that you do that. And finally, are you saving at least 5% of everything you make every week, every month? 5%. And you can do the math. 5% of $100 is $5, I believe. Can't you afford that? You know you can. Put that away, and nobody touches that. If you do that, you are then financially fit. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have problems, and there's a lot more to saving money and protecting yourself than that. But that's the basis. That gives you a peace of mind that you normally wouldn't have. You know, one of the things that I'm always concerned about is what I call our failure to properly educate our children financially. See, we play educational roulette. We give them a little bit of social studies, history, all of these different things we give them. But what's the one thing we know that our children are going to be? They're going to be consumers. And yet we don't demand that we teach our children to be educated consumers. Well, that's part of what we have today in terms of this show. My guest is someone who is in the process of doing that. You've heard of Visa. What you may not have heard of is that Visa has a program and it's ongoing that deals with the issue of finances. And my guest, Hugh Norton, is head of the director of the financial literacy program that Visa has now, I understand, run for some 10 years. Hugh, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here. Yeah. You know, financial literacy is you're absolutely right in the fact that financial literacy is maybe the most important thing that kids are ever going to learn, and we do them a great disservice in our families and in our schools by not adequately giving them the tools that they're going to be using every day. Visa has a financial literacy program. It actually started back in about 1995, so we've been doing it for about 20 years now. And our focus is providing the educational tools that teachers, parents, and other financial educators can use in order to make learning not just effective but fun and engaging. That's been the big focus of Visa's program. It's called Practical Money Skills for Life, and our most popular item, obviously because it has to deal with the most popular sport in the U.S., is our financial football program. And we have a lot of fun with that.
So you make it attractive to folks. So come on and learn. What I can't for the life of me understand is why do we play what I call this educational roulette? we give them a little bit of this, a little bit of that through their school years in case they become doctors. And that's wonderful. But what's the one thing that we know these kids are going to be? They're going to be consumers.
Sure.
And yet we let them out of school without a – they can't even balance their checkbooks. And I know Visa is aware of that, and this is probably part of the reason you started the program.
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting. I think it's important for kids, whether it's through the reading they do or TV, internet, music, everything they see sort of encourages them to spend, even when it's doing it in a very tacit way. So,
right.
You know, whether that's the TV program where they're seeing the young 20-somethings getting their job for the first time and they're living in New York City.
Yeah.
And somehow they have this fabulous apartment and newer clothes and all that stuff. So they go, oh, okay. You know, so that's what I'm supposed to have.
Right,
that's the
right.
way things are supposed to be. And it's important to hear that message. So, you know, I mean, the point that you made about financial literacy being something that they're going to be using every day, why aren't we teaching this, is something – recently, I was at a high school here locally in Bowie, Maryland, with Kirk Cousins and Representative Steny
right,
Hoyer.
Right.
And Kirk brought that up to the kids and was talking about the fact that, listen, like, you may or may not use your calculus. You may or may not use even your social studies.
That's right.
You will. Every day you're going to use your finances. So this is something you need to take control of. And it's their responsibility. It's the child's responsibility, but it's also the responsibility of the parents and the teachers to give them those tools, because they can't just go out and do it by themselves.
It makes so much sense, and that's why Visa is involved. That's why you need to know about the programs, and that's why Hugh was here to tell you about the programs. Hugh Norton, director of their program, Financial Education at Visa, Financial Literacy Program. When we come back, we'll learn more about the program, what's happening, and how you can be involved. And it's all about making sure that you have the tools in hand. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Hugh Norton. He's director of the U.S. Financial Education Program at Visa. They are nationwide, worldwide, and they are doing what they can do. First of all, to improve the educational lot, financial literacy of all of us, and then to move forward so that you can have the tools that you need, know how to use them, whatever you plan to do. And, you know, I explained to you initially being financially fit. Now, there's a lot more to that. Obviously, because you can save money, you can invest, but you first have got to be comfortable, folks. That's so important. Once you're comfortable and you say, hey, I got money in the savings account, I know I'm going to meet my debt, then you can start thinking about all the other things out there to do. One of the programs that I really think is a wonderful program is you guys look toward veterans. Mm-hmm. The people that protect us, they need to protect their finances as well, and that's part of the program.
Yeah, so back in 2014, we actually started something called the Veterans Financial Coalition with a number of different groups, all sort of focused on serving the very unique needs that veterans have. I mean, and one of the biggest focuses of that sort of came about because we asked the CFPB to identify, you know, where the greatest need lay.
Yeah.
And they talked about that sort of the population of veterans who are coming out of the military, they're transitioning, going through things, looking for a job, less formalized programs. So, we've worked to create a number of different programs, a survival guide for veterans who are coming out to help them navigate the benefits program, which can be very, very challenging.
Sure.
And additionally, to work with Consumer Action, we're doing veterans training. So we work with groups that deal with veterans in order to provide them with the materials that they can.
How do they know about this?
Well, we'll actually, so we can go around. First of all, the veteransfinancialcoalition.com is the site, and all of the materials that are available right there. But we work through, Consumer Action, like I said, to identify groups that work with veterans in order to train them.
Right.
And then additionally, right now, we're just starting a program with the AFCPE, and they're the folks who actually do the financial counseling on bases.
Right.
And we're starting a program with them where we're looking to identify 1,500 veterans who are in need of financial counseling, and we're going to provide that to them for free. So, that's something – it's an important thing. In counseling, I don't think a lot of people know this. I think people and I've even dealt with this recently with my own family. They feel like I don't have enough money for that. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough money for a budget. I don't have enough money to get financial counseling. Right. Professional financial advice, that's for the wealthy. You know, they don't understand that this is something that, you know, why wouldn't you, if you're struggling, why wouldn't you go out and talk to someone who deals with this stuff on a day-to-day
basis?
Point
well made.
All the ins and outs and how to help you out.
So. Yeah. No, it's a valid point, and we somehow get into our heads, well, you got to be at a certain level. No, you don't. If you're spending money and making money and you have a family to support, you're at the level.
Yeah.
Now, how do you do it the right way? How do you put it together? Tell me again how if somebody's hearing this and they want to know more about
it. Sure. They should go to the veteransfinancialcoalition.com. That's one of the sites. Also, if you go to the practicalmoneyskills.com, mm-hmm. That's another one of the sites. You can find all of the materials, you can find help. And you know, listen, what we try to do is provide not just educational materials, but also materials that can be fun. So, you know, we've worked with Marvel to create a comic book. We've worked with the NFL to create a game. We've worked with FIFA to create a game. We really try to bring interest and engagement into it. And that can be something that's as easy as, you know, I actually recently did this with my kids.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I have three kids.
And how old are they?
They're 9, 5, and 3.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so during bring your child to work day.
Yeah.
I was trying to decide how young we could go with some of the games. And so I sat down with my two oldest. So I sat down with the 8-year-old at that and 4-year-old. And we sat and we went through the financial soccer game, and they didn't know most of the questions.
Right.
But I found myself, you know, sitting there and explaining all of the issues and topics that were coming up, and it was this really great introduction to all these different things that I never would have thought about bringing up.
That's a wonderful part of it too, because not only are you teaching, but you're self-learning again or refreshing, which is so important. We can't teach what we don't know, and in this case, you're providing an opportunity for people to know. When we come back, we'll hear more from Hugh Norton and some of the things that Visa is involved in. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry here on the Radio America Network. Nice to have you with us. This is Home and Family Finance. Very pleased to be with you, and I hope you're enjoying the program. My guest, Hugh Norton, head of U.S. Financial Education at Visa. And if you didn't know they have this program, it is in place, and it is there for you, and you need to learn about a lot of the different things they're doing, including there's a USOC, Athletic Career Education Summit, that you guys are involved in terms of overall. I know you had the summit last month, but what's going on with that?
Yeah, so one of our big partnerships, you know, obviously people know about the NFL and FIFA, but one of our big partnerships is with the IOC, the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
And once again, we asked them, you know, what can we do? How can we provide value to this, you know, this partnership? And they really identified financial literacy as something that's extremely important. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's important here in the U.S., but
it's worldwide important.
It really is a gigantic problem worldwide, and especially with these athletes, because they're asked to focus primarily on sport,
mm-hmm.
right? And even something like finance can be a distraction from the mind of a coach.
Right.
So this is something where we're trying to not just provide the athletes with financial training, but also sort of change the culture where people understand. I mean, as you sort of have reinforced over and over again this morning, the fact that this is peace, right? This is, you know, when you do this, it's going to provide you with peace. And the fact is for a competitor, they're going to compete better when you actually give them the tools to just think
mind
about
is clear.
Their sport.
Just go out and do your thing. Don't have to worry about, you know, and the same thing with veterans. How do you fight a war if you're worried about your family?
Precisely.
You know, how do you do that? So that's what I love about Visa sees that and says, look, let's get these things in good order. Let's do what we need to do to make sure that you have your financial house in good order. And most of us, unfortunately, we just don't. It's just the bottom line, you know. We want to. We just don't.
And next month.
Next month. You know, we'll do it. I know you guys did something in Lambeau Field. I was looking at that.
Oh, yeah. So we've partnered with 49 different states at this point to distribute our financial football game in every school high school and middle school in the United States. And so the Lambeau event was sort of part of that. The Wisconsin Financial Literacy Summit was going on. And as a part of that, that's part of the Department of Financial Institutions there and their Governor's Council. And so we went there and we held a financial football game for all the educators there. So there were about 150 educators from across the state of Wisconsin. We brought in Jake Ryan from the Packers. He was one of their young linebackers. Yeah, great kid. And, you know, and so he talked to them a little bit about, you know, identifying with kids and how to add that interest to financial literacy. Mm-hmm. And then we played the game as sort of a demonstration for these teachers. And it was an amazing thing to be right there in Lambeau Field. Dude. You know, you're going back. We filmed the interview and you're sitting there and you're looking down at the field and they have the grow lights on the field. Yeah. And, you know, kind of just an amazing thing.
Tell me about this. What is this? AFCPE?
AFCPE. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. So AFCPE, they are the organization that does all of the financial counseling on bases.
Okay.
And so we're working with them and with Consumer Action in order to both train groups that work with veterans mm-hmm. on bases mm-hmm. and also to – we're working right now with AFCPE to provide financial counseling for free to about 1,500 veterans. We're looking to identify veterans. And in fact, if you're interested, and that's something
that
if you know someone who would be interested in this, or if you feel like you'd be a good candidate for financial counseling, I'd encourage you to reach out to us either through the practicalmoneyskills.com, either through that site, or through the veteransfinancialcoalition.com site. Or, if you know somebody from AFCPE or you go to that site, you can reach out that way as well.
Look, folks, Visa is in it to win it. And to win it means that all of us are better educated. We're better financially educated. That's what I've been doing this show for you for 10 years. I could talk about all the highbrow stuff. And you know what? It's kitchen table issues. It's the basic issues. Now, you can go from here to wherever you want. But first, you've got to feel secure. You've got to feel comfortable. You've got to know that you're making your money work for you, that you're saving, that you've got your family taken care of. And that's what Visa is about. I mean, that's what you all look at and say, how can we establish here in our communities a comfortable base, a place for you to go, and programs that are going to help you?
100%. And, you know, this is something also that, for example, working with the athletes, they had just come back from their White House visit.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking to them. We did two sessions. And we try to put things in the way that, you know, they understand. And when you're going, listen – if you have a pain in your knee, the best thing is not to ignore that ignore it and hope it goes away.
Well
if there's a bill sitting on your counter, the best thing is not to ignore it and hope it just goes away. Yeah. If you confront things, you will never be sorry. Yeah. This is, you know, that's the best outcome.
Hugh, it's a wonderful way to put it. And the beauty that I like now is that thanks to Visa, this business of financial literacy is not something boring. Mm-hmm. It's something real that we can all help ourselves if we learn to be good financial counselors. That's all simple as that.
Absolutely.
You've been great to come in. Thank
Thanks
you so much.
Coming.
I know you're busy. I know because it took us 4 months to get you open.
well, we hope you'll come back soon.
Yeah, you're welcome back. Anytime you're doing a program that makes a difference and educates people, you're always welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about there's more to just the cost of the car that you should be concerned about. Huh? Yeah. And where's hybrid and all of that? We'll have that and lots more. Stay with us. This is Home and Family Finance.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And we continue with the full expectation that you are somewhere where you're probably going to experience some seasons change, some of the season changes, except for probably down in the very extreme parts of Florida or out in California. But otherwise, all of us go through the changes. And when the season changes, expenses also change because road conditions change. Autumn is upon us, and it is time for you to take a look at what the family clunker is going to cost you. Most of us, when we think about buying a car, we think about the price of the car and can I afford it? But it goes far beyond that. As my next guest is can attest to, as a matter of fact, because Joe Trotta is with a company called RepairPal, which is an internet-based company, the nation's most popular auto repair estimator, conducting their help to you if you have a problem. Have you thought about, okay, I'm going to buy the car, I'm going to get this clunker, but do you think about what is a repair cost going to be? But even more importantly is what should it be? And how would I know that? And Jill, welcome to the program. If I need to know the actual cost or the where it should be, I could contact you, right? Is that how it works?
Absolutely. You know, at RepairPal, we've put a lot of work into creating an estimator for consumers that is fair. So when you go on there, you put in your zip code, the year, make, and model, and it will return what a fair price for a quality shop would charge you to do that repair.
That's fascinating, and I didn't know that you were there. So I could, if I go into a shop and they say, look, we think you need a water pump or a radiator or transmission work, I should, before I do that, is to reach out to you on the net and say, what should this cost? And where would you suggest I go? Is that how it works?
Exactly. You know, what we've done is coupled the estimator with a network of shops that we've thoroughly vetted. So you go on, you find out what that repair should be, and then you'll find the best shops in your market to do that repair. And we've checked them out. So we've checked them out to make sure that they've done their training. We've checked them out to make sure that their customer service is up to the level that it should be. Mm-hmm. And I'm the director of the automotive group, and what my job is as a 25-year industry veteran is I put my final stamp of approval on every shop we put in our network. And my final stamp of approval is, would I send my mother into that shop by herself?
Well, that's a pretty good tester, that's for sure. I'm glad you're here. Look, I think anytime there is a wait that consumers can find out more than they know, meaning where they can call someone and say, how about, or in this case, go on computer and say, what should this be? Knowledge is key. Knowledge is always the important part of it. How many calls or how many people contact you on a daily basis? Do you know?
You know, I don't know on a daily basis, but I'm not very good at math. But on a monthly basis, we get between 4 and 5 million site visitors a month.
Wow.
Who come onto our site. So we are right now the largest consumer automotive repair site on the internet.
Well, as a result of that, folks, Jill and her company, they can tell you things that they can aggregate, meaning they can put together figures and things and say, okay, hybrids may be the most expensive or less. Some compacts, what's the most spacious and affordable SUV? So let me ask a question. Let's start out with hybrids. Do these cars cost more or less to repair?
You know, in general, hybrid maintenance and repair can be less.
Wow.
You know, your upfront cost is going to be more to buy that vehicle. So you have to leverage it with, are you going to have that gas savings over the life of the vehicle, what you're going to pay extra for that vehicle? Mm-hmm. If you're driving a lot of miles, the answer is probably yes. And the cost to repair that vehicle is going to be a little bit less. You know, unless you get into bigger issues like batteries and things like that. But that usually, you know, you're plus 100,000 miles.
Right.
So the calculations that we did on the vehicles that we have on our list are for the most common repairs that you would be likely to have to do within the first 100,000 miles of ownership.
And Jill, tell me, do people think about the repair cost when they buy a car generally? What has been your history there? What do you find?
You know, I find that people don't think about it. I mean, especially my brother and I have this conversation all the time because he drives a lot and he buys a lot of cars. He has a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And I always point out to him, I'm sure you can afford to buy that car, but you need to make sure that you can afford to drive that car.
Okay.
You know, because a lot of luxury vehicles and expensive vehicles will lose a lot of value, like that is 10 years old, right?
Right.
But when you repair that vehicle, you're not repairing the $10,000 car that you bought. You're repairing the $60,000 car that it sold for new.
Wow. And that's a thought, too. What about compacts? I know a lot of folks feel if I buy a little car, my expenses will be less. Is that true?
You know, in general, I think that's true, but there are vehicles out there, like the Volkswagen Jetta is a really expensive vehicle to repair.
Wow.
And that would fall into that range, and it would fall into an inexpensive vehicle to buy. you know, the Mitsubishi, I think it was one of the other compacts, yeah, the Lancer, it ended up on the highest cost to repair list.
Wow.
So you really have to, like, do your research and know.
Right. My guess is Jill Trotta, and her company has done that. They've already done the research. So if you're looking for this information, folks, you can go to RepairPal, www.repairpal.com. When we come back, we'll tell you more about cars and the cost and what are your best buys. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Jill Trotta, and she is with RepairPal.com. It's a wonderful company, proprietary database of auto repair pricing across the U.S., a place that you can go let me put it this way. When you auto repairs are simply unavoidable, folks. It is part of the auto ownership. And you got to schedule repair maintenance. You got to do all of the work that needs to be done. There's no getting around it. You're not going to just junk your car because it doesn't work. But you're going to pay for the repair part of it. And as you just heard Jill say, most of us buy cars. We forget about that end of it until we run into the problem. And then when we run into the problem, those repair costs can really be up there, can't they, Jill?
Oh, yeah. You know, people budget for a lot of things, but in general, people don't budget for auto repair.
Yeah, yeah. But I've heard people say, I bought a foreign car because they're not as expensive to repair. Is that true?
You know, cars today are kind of world cars. So some makes and models of foreign cars are less to repair, but also some makes and models of American cars are less to repair as well. It's a crapshoot.
Unbelievable. I was looking at the list, and let's just put it out there, the most expensive car models to repair. What's the number one most expensive car model to repair?
Would be the Lincoln MKZ, which is a big SUV, which is not surprising. It's a big luxury SUV.
Yeah.
So it's going to kill you on gas, and it's going to kill you in the pocket. It'll be comfortable.
Well, yeah. The thing that I looked at, and I was just fell out of my seat, Joe, the average repair cost for this car is $2,600. That's the average repair. That's off the charts. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's a pretty big number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, of course, there's the Audi, the Lexus, the Volkswagen Passat, I guess, the BMW, the Mercedes-Benz. I'm reading these in order, folks. Mitsubishi Lancer, you made mention of that. The Infiniti, the Chrysler Malibu, of all things, Chrysler Equinox, the GMC Acadia or whatever it is. Anyway, you get the idea.
Yeah, Acadia.
Yeah, and then the Chrysler 300. Is got a nice price tag to it. Now let's talk about the top 20 most affordable cars, and I'll let you start that listing for me, would you?
Yeah, you're looking at most affordable vehicle out there right now to repair is the Nissan Altima Hybrid. You have a Ford Fusion Hybrid up there, and the Toyota Prius.
Oh wow! Okay, so these are the least expensive. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so these are vehicles that are inexpensive to repair. They don't require a lot of repairs in the first 100,000 miles of ownership.
What if I'm about to buy a car, Jill, and I've thought about this and I'm being thoughtful and I say, I wonder about the repairs. Can I contact you guys and get information, or do I have to pay something for that?
No, we are totally free to consumers. So you just come onto our site, you put in your information, your make, model, your zip code, and it'll let you know. We also have question and answer forums. Mm-hmm. There's also places on our site where you can email and ask questions. So it's pretty functional. We have a repair library on our site where you can go on there, and there's an encyclopedia of auto repair, so it gives you an understanding. There's a lot of information on RepairPal.com that is beneficial for consumers.
And I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I suspect that your service is responsible for at least making people be making those who would overcharge be a little bit more responsible, because they know that I could come to your site and kind of get a real sense of what I should be paying.
Absolutely. You know, I've done a lot of research, because one of the benefits of having 4 to 5 million site visitors a month is I can ask a lot of questions and get a lot of answers. And what we found is that 85% of the people check the price of an auto repair during the transaction.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, what also was kind of scary about it is that we found that 45% check it after they've already told the shop to go ahead and repair it.
They've done what?
They've checked it. They've checked the price after they already gave authorization.
So it didn't help them, did it? If they've already authorized.
It didn't help them. You know, they said 85% of people are checking, but a large percentage already tell the shop, okay. Yeah, well, and then check the repair, where it should be the opposite.
Yeah, why is that?
You know, check it. So that gives you really the talking point with the shop.
Yeah, why is that?
You know, I think just because people are generally distrustful of auto repair, and they don't, a lot of people who run auto shops are, they're mechanics, and they are good at fixing cars. But, you know, there's a whole people aspect to the business, and I think that's where the industry kind of gets hurt a lot, is that you have somebody who understands cars very deeply, but they don't really understand people very deeply. So there's a lot of miscommunication that goes on.
Well, Jill, here's a question that I know everybody's saying. Okay, do I go to the dealership to get my car repaired, or do I go out and find an independent guy that's working out there and more, you know, on the order of Jiffy Lube and like that? Who should I go to for repairs of my car? Who's the best deal I'm going to get?
The best deal you're going to get is to go to a good quality independent shop like we have in our network. So you want a shop that's done training, that treats their customers right. And I think you'll have good experience with that. And your price point for an independent shop is likely to be less than a dealership.
Okay, so it's cheaper.
If your car's under warranty, you should definitely take it to the dealership for warranty repairs.
Okay.
But outside of that, you know, find a good quality trusted shop. Build a relationship with that shop.
Okay, and your site recommends people that you know that are reputable that can get the job done.
Absolutely.
All right, give us your address again, Jill.
It is repairpal.com.
Okay, folks, that's simple. Now, don't tell me that you didn't know when you got ripped off because you didn't heed what we've just told you. Jill Trotta, thank you so much for not only having the site but for taking time to join us. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And, folks, I can't make it any simpler than that. You know, this site is in place, and it's there for your use. And all you've got to do is go there and check out before you authorize someone to work on your car. It's sticker shock is one thing, but I tell you what, repair shock will wipe you out. So make sure you check with RepairPal and take care of business. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back. You're listening to Home and Family Finance here on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we're very pleased to have you here. And I am very pleased to have my next guest. You know, this involves two women, one that I know because she's a neighbor on the Eastern Shore, and the other I know of because she was a famous, famous chef. We're talking about Julia Child, and I think all of us know of her. But you may not know Pamela Hain, who did have a pleasure of talking with her and meeting with her, and then had the audacity, if you will, to write a book called In Julia's Kitchen. Pamela, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
How dare you take that? I mean, this is just a marvelous book and with pictures. What was the provocation? Why did you want to do this?
Well, I interviewed Julia in 1989. At the time, I was doing a lot of kitchen design in Washington, D.C., and at that point, a lot of people wanted fancier kitchens. They wanted chef stoves and the center islands and stuff. And I thought, let's talk to the pros and see what's involved. And so Julia just happened to go to the same college I went to, and I simply found her in my directory, alumni directory, you know. So I wrote her a note, and she sent me back a hilarious postcard saying that architects didn't know a darn thing about kitchen designs since they didn't know how to cook.
She was some person. You know, I love the story, the idea, and what caught my fancy is that when I was growing up, and maybe you were the same, the family sat around the kitchen table and we had discussions. We talked about a series of things, everything that was relatable to us. Today, families are all over the place. But what her feeling was what? That the kitchen table or eating together was important?
Yes. For her, the kitchen table was the hearth. She entertained in her kitchen all the time. People didn't eat in her dining room. No matter how important they were, they sat at her kitchen table. So she would typically have a dinner party for six, and that's where they ate. And sometimes they would help her a little bit at final preparation. But conversation was very important for Julia at that table. And even on her TV shows, she ate with her staff afterwards. So that was really the essence of all that cooking she did, was to share it with people and to share their lives and stories.
What was important to me was, if we're going to teach our young people and others the importance of family, the importance of being together, the importance of financial literacy, of planning, you have to sit down and talk about that with people. And no better place when I was growing up than it was around the kitchen table. How about you?
Absolutely. I've certainly had many sharing events like that. And we adopted two girls from Russia, always sat down with the girls, and they're big advocates of the family meal now. And there's some amazing statistics about just how valuable this experience is for young people. Their vocabularies improve. They get better manners. They typically get better grades in school. They're less likely to be involved in risky behavior later on. They're happier, and so it goes. And so many of our people today have an obesity problem. One of the difficulties with these open kitchens is that people can wander in and snack at will, and it has terrible implications. Also, all that snacking gets to be expensive.
Absolutely,
you know,
it does.
Snack food is one of the more expensive things you can purchase in the stores. So the more you can fill people up with nutritious items rather than all these crackers and chips, the better off they are.
Well, the more you can fill people up with what you have taken the time to do to fill us up with the more about Julia Child and the things that she believed in, and then the pictures are just beautiful. Who shot the pictures when for this?
My co-author is a guy named Jim Scheer. He was Julia's recommended photographer. He worked with her for 20 years. She considered him the son she never had. They're very close. And
yeah.
He has a lot of wonderful anecdotes of sharing meals and good times with Julia.
Pam, what was she like? What was she like? Did you enjoy her?
I very much enjoyed her. She was a delightful person and very forthright, very humorous. And didn't mince her words. I don't know what the politics of lottery reviewers are, but at one point she told me she didn't care for the Trumps. I was going to ask her if she was going to take Trump Airlines. I was just joking around.
Yeah, I know.
At the end of the chat.
Where can we find your book? Where can we find it?
Oh, the book. Oh, it's on Target, Amazon, Walmart.
Oh, great!
All over there.
And the name again of the book is?
In Julia's Kitchen.
Absolutely.
Practical and Convivial Kitchen Design Inspired by Julia Child.
Thank you, Pamela. Pleasure to have you on the program. I've got your book, and I hope others get it as well. And come back and see us again, would you please?
Sure enough.
Okay. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be back same time, same place next week. We'll be looking for you. Have a good day.